And one other area in which Socrates appears to be quite different from either of the philosophical traditions with which he's associated is that he appears to have had a mystical side to his character as well, some sense of an actual contact with the divine. And I'm referring here not only to his celebrated references to his daimon, his spirit that he seems to have communicated with, but also to an incident when he was serving with the Athenian army, and on one occasion, in the middle of winter, he seems to have spent the better part of the day in a trance, as if he were actually communicating with this divine spirit of his. So there are ways in which he both brings together the various traditions of the Ionian philosophers and the sophists, other ways in which Socrates is really quite unique and unlike either of those traditions. To understand his impact on Athenian society and to understand his trial, we need to know about his circle. The Socratic philosophy is primarily known to us through the writings of his pupil, Plato. And it's from Plato's dialogues that we get a consistent picture emerging of Socrates hammering away at definitions of goodness, beauty, courage, and justice. Most of the Platonic dialogues that describe Socrates, I should say, have him involved in a conversation with some other Athenian in which he will ask them about a definition of justice or goodness or courage. And it becomes fairly clear, although it is not stated in as explicit a fashion as we might like, it becomes clear from these dialogues that the essential core of Socratic teaching was that all virtues are one. The unity of all virtues. These are all reflections of each other. He returns to this theme over and over again in his philosophy, and he does so in order to demonstrate that the people that he's talking to, the Athenians in the street, are people whose assumptions about the world get in the way of a clearer understanding of truth. Gnome getting in the way of episteme. Okay. Now, there are various teachers, great teachers in human history, who've had different ways of getting their message across, either short aphorisms or telling parables. These are associated with the great teachers. Socrates' technique sets him apart. His way of teaching was a system known as elenchos, and elenchos basically means a kind of cross-examination. It's a system whereby Socrates will normally ask a question of his interlocutor or make a proposition to elicit a yes or no answer from the interlocutor. And it'll be something along the lines of, can oratory be used for evil purposes? Something like that. The interlocutor will normally give an answer, and then Socrates, by means of a series of direct questions, will lead his interlocutor through a syllogism, a line of reasoning. And if the person tries to give complicated answers, Socrates will normally say, I'm only a simple man, please just keep it to a yes or no answer. And so through this intellectual straitjacket, he forces his interlocutors to accept or reject a series of propositions. And the final result in nearly every instance is that the interlocutor is forced to say at the end the exact opposite of what he said at the beginning. And when this is pointed out to him by Socrates, the interlocutor will normally say something marvellous like, it seems, Socrates, as if I didn't know what I was talking about. Now, this system of elenchos may have been very good in terms of establishing the victor in a debate between two people, but it must have also been quite infuriating. And even worse than that, in the eyes of many of his contemporaries, it was a technique that suggested that Socrates, in a way, was not a true philosopher at all. He was a smart aleck who was attempting to humiliate the people with whom he spoke. Now, Socrates was associated with the young men of the upper class. And the connection here is an important one, because it was these youths who learnt the system of elenchos from Socrates. It would be really comparable to freshmen coming home from their first semester at university, having taken a class in French philosophy or literary theory and dazzling their family with anecdotes about Derrida or Lacan or Foucault over the turkey at Thanksgiving. I think that many Athenian parents were shuddering as they saw what was happening to these young men who were in Socrates' hands, who were in his circle. He becomes associated then with this newfangled education, which generally the Athenians lump together as sophistry. And as we've seen, there are certain ways in which Socrates is not a sophist. But I think to many people, the distinction was a fine one that really made no difference at all.